I'm Courtney Romano, and you're listening to The Break Breakdown. Today, we're going to break down the details around the first round of filming. But before we get there, a quick reminder of where we are in the process. We first read the script out loud over Zoom in January 2021. In late spring, the producers, Allie, Sarah, Benji, and I, decided our goal would be to film in October. Through the summer, we were knee-deep in fundraising. None of us had ever asked for money for a creative project. We needed nearly $70,000 to shoot 7 episodes. And during that same time, we cast all 14 actors and assembled a production team. At the end of July, we had raised $30,000, which wasn't even half of the budget. But we had a cast, a crew, a shoot date, and momentum. So for reasons both emotional and practical, we decided that we'd go as far as the $30,000 would carry us, which meant that we would only shoot episodes 1, 2, and 3. The remaining 4 episodes would have to wait. We'd worked hard to get to this place. The pandemic had been raging nearly 18 months. Many of the artists on set with us in October had not worked in over a year and a half. As far as process goes, this was it. We were about to call action on a script that I began writing in 2016. My guest today is executive producer of this podcast and Kinsley Versus, Benjamin Shaw. Welcome back.
Hey, Courtney. It's good to be back.
Someone asked me once, someone interviewed me, and they said, it's brilliant. You decided to shoot in 2 sections. And I was like, it's not brilliant. I didn't want that. I wanted to have everyone on set for a full week. I wanted to zone in. I wanted to do it all at once. I wanted it to be done. I wanted it to be fully funded. But you know what? You have to deal with like whatever the realities are of the situation and play to those realities. And then you actually end up getting further most of the time, I think.
You do get further. That's why we built a whole podcast season around just this idea that process is circuitous.
Our executive producers over at South James had suggested like, well, if you don't get to the max funding, would you consider doing just a couple of episodes? And I remember initially I was like, no, we need like, there's a goal for this to be produced in full. We need the full package. It's part of what we're doing at Queensboard. It's part of what I'm doing as a director. Like, we need to see that full arc, which is like the artistic side of me being like, the story isn't told. But when it came down to the practical side of, we actually don't have the money to do it. So do you want to wait more or do you want to see what can get done with 3 episodes? This was not how I wanted it to go, but I had a really strong instinct that if we did this, despite all the other obstacles that would be in our way, we would eventually figure out how to do the back half of the series.
Yeah, it can be frustrating in the moment when it's not going how you want it to or how you imagined. One of the downsides about shooting in 2 sections was we, in certain areas, had to double the cost. And for instance, there's gear rental, which is by the day, but then the pickup and delivery comes with its own costs. When on round 2, with transportation and gear pickup specifically, we handled that far more effectively. I think we just did a better job at planning. Our approach was now based on some actual experience rather than theoretical. I think we are continually saying, gosh, isn't it lucky that it worked out this way? Because look how much better it is, or look how much smarter I was, or look how calmer I was when I got to, for both of us, the second round of shooting.
Anytime I came to you with like a little bit of a twinge of, oh crap, what are we going to do? I remember you saying to me, you're not alone, Courtney. We're figuring this out together. And that always settled me back down because, like I said earlier, I'm so used to just flying free and going fast and like doing it on my own and figuring it out. It was important for me to remember that there was a whole producing team. We were all making that decision together. And when I slowed down and I kind of took that in, I really believed if we did a good enough job on episodes 1, 2, and 3, we would at least have something to prove that we could do 4, 5, 6, and 7.
I knew we would do a good enough job. I thought, I know that we are going to deliver on episodes 1, 2, and 3 as a team. Perhaps that's one of the benefits of being on the producer side. I didn't have my own performance anxiety, so to speak. I knew I was here to support you. And guess what? I can believe in you more than you can believe in you sometimes.
Imagining all the ways that it could go wrong actually did give me a lot of anxiety. It was also just incredibly intense to do it within my own apartment, because as a writer, I had written these things based on like my lived experience. And a lot of my lived experience is at home.
The work is so personal, even when it's not being shot in your own home, and all the more so when it is being shot in your own home. And I think also that's why it's important to have a team of people that comprise various parts of your life. Sarah was speaking about how she was new to our group of friends and colleagues. And obviously Allie and I are old hat. And if everybody's familiar, then I don't know if you might be shortcutting things too much, because there's a shared vocabulary, a shared history, which is fun and valuable, but also it's great to have to fold in new members of your team, widen your circle, because you're going to be more intentional.
Let's take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll talk about the second day of filming, when we shot the first scene of the series inside a local bar in Astoria. And because Benji insists on this, we'll also revisit the moment when I snapped at him on set, which he apparently loved. Stay with us.
If you're listening to this podcast, you might be an actor, a filmmaker, an artist, or someone who just loves to get involved with the process of indie art. Maybe you're about to graduate from school, or you're looking for a community, or maybe you're mid-career but feeling uninspired with your current path. Maybe you just love the scrappy independent startup vibe, or you're hoping to find new collaborators to work with on your next project. Whoever you are, we're so glad you're here and we want to connect. The best way to do that, sign up for our newsletter in the show notes. When you sign up for our newsletter, you'll get first access to news, casting notices, project updates, party invites, and more. Our emails are short and sweet, and they aren't sent too often, and they give you a super quick update so you can find out what's happening with Queensbird. Want to connect even further? Email us at hello@queensbirdfilms.com. hello@queensbirdfilms.com. We want your feedback, your thoughts, your pitches, musings, or anything else you want us to read. We're here, we're real people, and part of what we love about filmmaking is the community it creates. So come be a part of ours. Sign up for our newsletter, link in the show notes, and let's make indie film together.
Welcome back. It is day 2 on the set of Kinsley Versus, and we're filming the opening scene of the series.
So this is page 1 of our script. Exterior Queens Coffee Shop window, day. Title card, 3 weeks earlier. A battle ensues. The cursor on Kinsley's computer blinks. She stares it down. It's Kinsley versus the blank page, and the cursor, as it usually does, has the edge. Kinsley types the title, In Hot Water, Quinoa and Me, and immediately deletes it. 1 point, cursor. Kinsley tries again, anxiety and quinoa, getting in the hot water. Delete, delete. The cursor blinks, blinks, blinks. What else you got? It writes. Kinsley deletes it. The point I'm making from reading from the script is the opening of the scene is actually happening on Kinsley's computer screen. And we had some ideas about how we were going to achieve this. We knew that, for instance, it would happen in post, but it's a really interesting challenge when you have a series of descriptions that you want to have imagery or visuals or footage to potentially lay over text in this instance. You had to know what was coming eventually in the final version in order to lay down or record footage that would be complementary to the script's description.
Yeah, a lot of it happened in post. And actually, where I was as a director was behind, because we had so many actors on set that day that they were in and out of hair and makeup, and it actually pushed us back. So what ended up happening directorially was I had to change some things about what you just read. But what I wanted to keep, obviously, was like the intensity, the anxiety, the actual storytelling of what is happening with this woman. Who is she? Where is she? What does she care about? And so there were certain things that we had to change, and certain shots we couldn't get. We couldn't get the over-the-shoulder shot to see her type it out on the screen, which is what I had originally imagined when I wrote it, that we would see the screen, we would see the words on the screen. But I remember coming up to you when I realized, talking with the DP, Alexa, that we weren't going to have time to shoot this over-the-shoulder shot. I was like, how am I going to get this elegantly on the screen? And I remember coming up to you, you were sitting at the bar, and I said, okay, this is what we're going to do. We're going to take the visual trope that we've had so far of text on the screen and Insta stories on the screen and this digital world overlaid on the screen in these different scenes. And we're going to use it here. So instead of seeing it over the shoulder, we're going to see the words anxiety and quinoa. We're going to see that on the screen itself. The storytelling is still going to just come from watching Lauren Kerman, who played Kinsley and is this incredible actor, do her acting thing.
What you're describing is the fact that the storytelling is going to come from a combination of things. In this instance, the text and also our actual live camera footage. Fascinating to me, you're filming something and you have to remember that while you're filming, something entirely different is going to happen in post. And you have to keep that in mind. Your artist's impulse is probably to say, this needs to be whole and complete and beautiful, when in fact, a lot of what's going to, about what the stuff that's going to complete it will never happen during this filming day. I would say another thing that's important for us to explain is that we had a lot of people on set that day. We had taken over this bar completely, gear, and then the actual scene that we were shooting. We had taken out, we had our hair and makeup took over their outdoor space, and it was a lot of logistics to manage. And being in somebody else's space that was generously lent to us was an enormous thing to consider. And that, you know, you have to be on schedule, of course, and you have to be respectful of a space that doesn't belong to you, but also you have to be respectful of how you run your set. And so I think for me, I was aware of a lot of the stuff around what was being filmed was people's time and people's belongings and people's, this whole physical establishment.
On the second day of shooting, we had so many more actors on set. We had like 8 actors on set, whereas the day before we had maybe 2 and sometimes 3 actors on set. So we were learning as a production team how to manage people, and not manage people, but like manage like people in physical space. How do we move people? How do we say, okay, everybody, we're here? And when we were in that cafe in the bar, I felt like we were going so slow that we all kind of huddled up, the producers kind of huddled up and said, all right, we're about to do this company move to go back to the apartment. What do we need to do better right now to make sure that this moves a lot faster? And we came up with a plan.
Yes. I think the thing we're reacting to was like, okay, we achieved this big thing that really just accounted for 2 pages of the script, but also we had to get everybody who was on set at the cafe/bar over to your house in one piece. And they all had to get out of costume because we didn't want them to travel in clothes, and they had to have a lunch break. And then we had to give another hour and a half when we got to the apartment to set up on the street and get people back into hair and makeup. And I think that's a fun part of process, because how you make something, often the making of the thing is so much more interesting than the thing itself, which is not to say that it's not beautiful, but what it takes to get something simple and beautiful is pretty extraordinary. Since we were shooting in a bar too, and that was supposed to be a cafe, there were all kinds of little ways in which Alex, our production designer, found simple gestures to make sure that we were living inside the world of a cafe during the day. And sometimes it took us a little bit more time, for instance, to dress the set. We didn't have a lot of pre-production design time. There was a lot of activity that also needed to happen because we were seeing the setting of our story for the very first time.
There were certain elements of it where I was like, maybe we should just give this up, like the steam coming from the coffee pot. And Alex, our production designer, to her credit, is like, no, it's hot coffee. The steam needs to be coming from the coffee cup. I really appreciated when other people in other creative departments were like, no, we have to get this. Because then when I looked at it in post, I was like, yes. Do I always wish I had more time and money to do more things and to get closer up and to get the over the shoulder and get all these things? Yeah, of course. But do I think that we captured the essence of what that original written scene is on the page? I do. And I think it's because everyone in each department is said, this is what I can cut and what I can't cut. And I think we made the right choices.
This also speaks to why you want to work with professionals. That's part of being a good artist, right? Being your own editor, advocating for what you need, understanding where you can compromise.
Right.
And yeah, I want to reiterate what you just said. I think a lot of people did their jobs really beautifully throughout the filming. Also, it's like, God, isn't it exciting to be around people who are good at what they do? Another part of my role, in case people are like sitting around thinking, what was he doing? I think a lot of what you do as a producer is you make sure that the thing is operational, right? That the car still has gas in it and that the brakes are working and that, in other words, everybody's being fed. Is everybody being listened to? If somebody needs Tylenol, is someone actually getting the person Tylenol? Right? You have a lot of artists working together, each who have their own version of what process is. For instance, one actor, when she's in hair and makeup, didn't really like to talk because she used that time to get into her zone before she was on camera. So as a producer, you're trying to make sure that everyone's needs are tended to and make sure the environment we were working in was set up for everyone to succeed.
Yeah, you were basically checking on my mental well-being. Is that because you said that I snapped at you?
As for the moment when you took a tone with me on the street, we were shooting on the street. This was after the cafe scene and we were filming outside. And so we were relying on a lot of daylight to get the look right. And I was aware that sunset would be coming soon. I remember saying to you, like, just want to check in on time. And you just said, give me a minute. I just need a minute. And it didn't actually bother me at all. I felt like, okay, Courtney's being really clear. And now my job as producer is get out of the way and make sure that other people know that she just needs some time to assess how best to achieve what's left in our day's work. But I would say you did kind of yell at me. Just want to say that for the record.
I did not yell. All right. Your truth is that I yelled. My truth is that I added some extra resonance to the top of my soft palate.
Yeah. It's funny to revisit it, isn't it, Court? To remember the pressure we were under, obviously to not be under that pressure now, but it's real. You get inside a pressure cooker because that saying, time is money, is a real thing.
It's more like, wow, that was a really heavy weight. I can't believe I lifted that. I'm so glad I'm not carrying it right now. But if I have to do it again, I know I can do it.
Hats off to you because you led us beautifully.
I want to thank Benji for joining us, and you'll be hearing more from him during the next few episodes. If you found today's episode interesting, I hope that you'll share it with your friends and tune in next time. And before we go, here's a last word on process.
Hey everyone, this is Benji once again, executive producer and sometimes guest host of The Break Breakdown. This season, we're talking about the process of making a digital series. At the end of each episode, we've been sharing anecdotes on process from other artists. So far, writer Jen Spira, choreographer Charles Anderson, and voiceover artist Eddie Lee. Now you're going to hear from a celebrated actor who works both in film and in theater, and how when she's on stage, process is put into action 8 times a week. Here is today's final word.
This is Cherry Jones, and I'm an actor. I've been thinking a lot about those moments that we have in the wings right before we walk out into the light and how we use that time. I had 2 very wonderful experiences with those moments in the wings when I was playing Amanda Wingfield in The Glass Menagerie and when I played Sister Aloysius in Doubt. And for Amanda Wingfield, places for me were not in the wings. Places for me was behind a screen on stage. The lights would go to black. They'd come up. Zach Quinto would begin that glorious monologue of Tom's. And I would look up to a lighting platform that was behind the proscenium that the audience could not see. And standing there grinning at me every single night would be Tennessee Williams. He would have a drink in one hand, a cigarette in the other, and we would just commune. One night it was raining on stage because it was a leak in the ceiling, in the roof, and he pantomimed opening an umbrella and laughing. It was, of course, in my own mind, but I swear to God, it was like he was really there. So that when I walked out on stage, I felt like he had my back, that he was in the house and rooting for us. The other experience was when I was doing Doubt. And places for me were at my desk with my fountain pen getting ready to be trundled on after Father Flynn's homily. And while I was sitting there, I would write a very long, detailed letter to the Virgin Mary, essentially asking for her prayers and her strength and guidance on how to deal with protecting my flock from this man, from this priest. And then I would sit there and I would remember every detail of the moment I saw Father Flynn touch William London's wrist. And the sky was dark and the wind was whipping up the dust on the playground and the mothers were in their chiffon scarves covering their beehives and their cat glasses. And I can tell you exactly how that child pulled away from that touch. And it just made me loaded for bear when I got trundled out onto that stage. And both of those preparations helped me immeasurably.
Today's episode of The Break Breakdown was hosted by me, Courtney Romano. It was executive produced by Benjamin Shaw, with audio and music supervision from Match Zimmerman. It was produced by Sarah States and created by me, Courtney Romano. Season 3 of The Break Breakdown is made possible through the generous support of Eddie and Wendy Shaw, with special thanks to Craig and Elle Hansen. And don't forget, you can watch the full series of Kinsley Versus now on YouTube. Just go to the show notes for the link. The Break Breakdown is a project of Queensbird Films.